Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
John Kerry said he was deeply moved and honored to visit Hiroshima, Japan, on Monday. The United States dropped an atomic bomb on Hiroshima on August 6, 1945, near the end of World War II. An estimated 140,000 people died in that bombing. The meeting included a tour of a World War II memorial to victims in Hiroshima. It was a stunning display, said Kerry, after visiting Hiroshima Peace Memorial Park. It is a gut-wrenching display. It tugs at your sensibilities as a human being, he added. Speaking of the U.S. alliance with Japan, Kerry said, My visit to Hiroshima has a very special meaning about the strength of the relationship and the journey we have traveled together since the difficult time of the war. The Secretary of State was asked if President Obama will visit Hiroshima when he attends a G7 leaders summit in Japan in May. Kerry said he hoped that one day the President of the U.S. would be among those who visited the city. He added that Obama had expressed an interest in visiting, but did not know if the President's schedule would permit it during his upcoming trip to Japan. Nuclear proliferation and disarmament, however, were important themes during discussions. Kerry commented at the end of a two-day meeting with other Group of Seven, or G7, foreign ministers. He was joined by foreign ministers from Germany, Italy, Britain, Canada, France, as well as Japan. Japanese Foreign Minister Fumio Kishida hosted the ministers' meeting. He was asked if Japan would seek its own nuclear weapons as suggested by U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. Kishida answered, For us to obtain nuclear weapons is completely inconceivable. The foreign ministers released a joint declaration in Japan calling for a world without nuclear weapons. The so-called Hiroshima Declaration discussed the security situations in Syria and Ukraine. It also noted North Korea's repeated violations of bans on its nuclear and missile tests. On Sunday, the seven ministers discussed issues, including the regional problems posed by China's increasing presence in the South China Sea. They also discussed North Korea's nuclear and missile programs. Next, Mario Ritter reports on how international sanctions against North Korea will affect the North Korean people.
Human rights organizations are supporting the latest international measures aimed at restricting North Korea's nuclear program. Yet, the economic sanctions could make life more difficult for many North Koreans who already live in poverty. Phil Robertson is with Human Rights Watch, a nonprofit rights group.
I think that the whole idea of pressure on North Korea is something that is important because it actually makes the government recognize that it can no longer live outside international law.
Robertson is Deputy Director of the Asia Division at Human Rights Watch. The United Nations Security Council adopted the latest sanctions after North Korea tested a long-range rocket in February 2016. 1 month earlier, North Korea carried out its fourth nuclear test. The sanctions set up trade and financial restrictions on North Korea to cut off financing to its nuclear and missile programs. But the UN measure failed to identify a 2014 UN resolution to refer North Korea to the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity. It also ignored a UN human rights report that documented abuses including political prisons, killings, enslavement, torture, and rape. The human rights measure has not been brought to a vote in the Security Council because North Korean allies, China and Russia, would veto it. The United States and China worked together on developing the international sanctions. China most likely opposed bringing attention to the human rights violations because of criticism of its own rights record. When the Council approved the sanctions on March 2nd, Samantha Power, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, did link the two issues. She accused North Korea of caring more about expanding its nuclear weapons program than growing its children. The U.S. recently announced new sanctions against North Korea. They note the North's human rights abuses as justification for the punitive measures. Some human rights advocates argue that humanitarian hardships caused by the sanctions are unavoidable. They say international action is needed to pressure the North Korean leadership to end its repressive ways. Choi Yong-sang is with the Network for North Korean Human Rights in Seoul. He said, "The sanctions from the international community will have an economic impact on North Koreans. But on the other hand, the North Korean regime will clearly feel the impact as well." The new UN measures could affect many North Koreans. Workers in the mining industry will likely suffer from the UN ban on the export of North Korean minerals. There are, however, humanitarian exceptions in the resolution that permit the trade of coal and iron not linked to government organizations. There are also restrictions that ban North Korean banking activity and identify a number of individuals and organizations linked to the North's nuclear program. These restrictions could have a chilling effect on possible donors and investors. The U.S. unilateral sanctions could target anyone connected to the North Korean labor export program that earns billions of dollars. Most of that money reportedly goes to the North Korean government. In February, South Korea closed the Kaesong Industrial Complex. The move put over 54,000 North Korean employees out of work. Yet the UN resolution states that it is not intended to have adverse humanitarian consequences for the civilian population of the DPRK. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization reported in February that the North Korean people are already suffering a significant food shortage. The FAO said North Korea needs 440,000 tons of food from overseas this year. Yet international donors have only provided 17,600 tons so far. North Korea's state media recently warned that the sanctions may cause another arduous march. That expression refers to the famine in the 1990s that is said to have killed over 3 million people. Most private South Korean aid programs for the North have been suspended because of the recent sanctions and tensions between the two sides. The Eugene Bell Foundation provides tuberculosis medicines to North Koreans. The group was blocked last month from bringing medicines to the North because of new South Korean unilateral sanctions. South Korea, however, did later make exceptions for humanitarian aid, and the medications did get through. Human rights activists support providing aid to innocent people in North Korea. These people are caught in the middle of the international dispute. But in the past, North Korea accepted the aid and used it for political purposes. Many countries, including the United States and South Korea, suspended assistance programs years ago. Phil Robertson has called for a close watch of aid.
Our view on humanitarian aid is that we don't agree to have restrictions on humanitarian aid, and we do support, for instance, support for food aid and other basic humanitarian materials for North Korea, but we believe also that these need to be strictly monitored.
Yet Choi Yong-sang says it is unclear if finding out how aid is given out is possible. If the international community can closely inspect the distribution process, it can assist the people without helping the regime. But we are not sure if North Korea would accept such a condition. The growth of private markets could ease the effects of the sanctions for many North Koreans. Since the 1990s, the people have become less dependent on the communist government for their daily needs. But as tighter sanctions are enforced, the more likely it is that ordinary North Koreans will experience greater economic pain than the leadership in Pyongyang. I'm Mario Ritter.
The head of the Central Intelligence Agency says his agency will no longer use a certain technique to get information from prisoners. Ann Ball has the story.
The CIA will not use waterboarding to get information from a detainee anymore. Waterboarding is a method that has been described as torture. It is used to force prisoners to give information. Usually, the detainee is held down on a board and water is poured on a cloth covering his face. It makes a person feel like they are drowning. John Brennan, the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, says the CIA would not use waterboarding even if a future president ordered the method to be used. Brennan said he would not use the tactics because this institution, the CIA, needs to endure or last. It was part of a program the CIA used after the 2001 terror attacks. Waterboarding was done by CIA employees to get information from terror suspects. They hoped to force suspects to reveal information about possible future attacks against the U.S.
President Barack Obama banned the techniques in 2009, calling them torture. The U.S. Senate released a report in December 2014 criticizing the CIA's use of the harsh techniques. They include waterboarding, mock or fake executions, ice baths, sexual threats, and other methods used against captured al-Qaeda members and other militants. The Senate report said the interrogations using these methods did not produce any intelligence that saved lives. But after the report's release, Brennan said that the interrogations had produced intelligence that helped stop attack plans and capture terrorists. There has been much criticism of waterboarding in the U.S. Critics say the so-called enhanced interrogation techniques are torture. Others defend the program, saying it was necessary for national security. Former Vice President Dick Cheney served under President George W. Bush. Cheney said they kept the country safe from more attacks. Jose Rodriguez ran the interrogation program for the CIA. He said information obtained through the interrogations helped capture Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Mohammed calls himself the architect of the September 11 attacks, the person who planned the attacks. He remains a detainee at the U.S. Military Detention Center in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. President Obama had said he would close the prison during his presidency. The U.S. government has tried to bring some detainees to trial, but legal analysts say that is made more difficult because some of the prisoners had been subjected to enhanced interrogations, including waterboarding. I'm Ann Ball.
For the second time in 2 years, all 8 Ivy League schools have offered admission to a teenager from Nigeria. Augusta Uwamazuna is in her final year at Elmont High School in Long Island, New York. She is at the top of her game, academically speaking. Few Americans are able to get accepted into every one of the Ivy League schools. The 8 are Brown University, Columbia University, Cornell University, Dartmouth College, Harvard University, the University of Pennsylvania, Princeton University, and Yale University. In addition, the teenager was accepted at 4 other schools in the United States. They are Johns Hopkins University, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, New York University, and Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. The 17-year-old is valedictorian of her high school class. She has a grade point average of 101.6. In a press release, Uwamazuna credited her success to the ideals of the town of Elmont, New York, her supportive parents, and her teachers. She said she is elated and thankful. Last year, Harold Eka from Elmont Memorial High was accepted for admission at all 8 Ivy League schools. He chose to attend Yale University after having a total of 13 schools to choose from. Eka was born in Nigeria and came to the United States when he was 8 years old. Uwamazuna is the daughter of Nigerian immigrants. She was a finalist in the 2016 Intel Science Talent search for her research on cement. Researchers say her findings could help prevent underwater oil rigs from breaking apart. She plans to seek a science-related study program in college. Uwamazuna has yet to make a decision on what school she will attend. But with her admission to 12 schools guaranteed, the decision is sure to be a difficult one. I'm Marcia James.
This is What's Trending Today. The Boston Globe is one of the most famous newspapers in the United States. On Sunday, the Globe made news when it published a special front page. The special page was dated 1 year in the future. It had a series of reports about what might happen if businessman Donald Trump is elected president. The newspaper published articles with names including Deportations to Begin, Markets Sink as Trade War Looms, and Bank Glitch Halts Border Wall Work. The articles were designed to get Americans thinking about what might happen if Donald Trump wins the U.S. presidential election. The stories were the Boston Globe's predictions of what might happen a year from now during a Trump presidency. On Sunday, the newspaper's editors explained in an opinion piece why they put together the special front page. They said the stories take Donald Trump at his word. They said the articles are predictions of what might happen if Trump acted on his campaign promises. One story said the leading measure of U.S. stock prices would drop almost 7,000 points in only 3 weeks if Trump ordered taxes on imports from Mexico and China. Another story lists all the ways his plan to expel over 11 million illegal immigrants would harm life in the United States. It said the deportation plan would cost $400 billion and require more than 900,000 immigration control agents. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. A new report from Human Rights Watch details the treatment of mentally sick people in Indonesia. The report is titled Living in Hell. It documents the practice of pasung. Pasung is the isolation of a person suffering from some sort of mental health problem. They might be held separate from others, either inside or outside their homes, or at a healthcare center. Sometimes they are held in place with tied ropes or chains. The situation forces the person in pasung to eat, sleep, and release waste in one small place.
The report says about 18,000 people currently live in pasung in Indonesia. The report also cites one case in which a man was trapped in a room for 15 years. Another case involved a 24-year-old woman suffering from depression after her husband left her and her small child. Photos show her chained to a wooden platform that serves as a bed.
Shanta Rao Bariga is the director of the Disability Rights Division at Human Rights Watch in Jakarta. She spoke to VOA by phone. Bariga says that Human Rights Watch has documented rights abuses against the mentally sick in many countries. These abuses often include chaining or tying people in place. She adds that such cases can be found at mental health centers in Ghana, Russia, Croatia, as well as in prisons in the United States.
Bariga warns that abuse is widespread. She says the victims seem invisible because they are held in isolation. The expert says stigma connected to mental health problems worsens the situation. She also said that there are not enough community-based mental health care and support services. Bariga said there is so much misinformation and misperception about mental health. In her words, people in Indonesia and in many other countries see it not as a medical condition, but as a curse, or that the person is possessed by evil spirits. As a result, people may turn to spiritual healers or prayer for a cure. They may choose not to use medical care, even if it is available.
Bariga traveled to Ghana in 2014 to study conditions at so-called prayer camps. Christian organizations own the camps. The camp leaders often declare themselves to be prophets. People go to the camps for help, she explains, during difficult times in their lives, after a death in the family, for example, or the loss of a job. But the camps also contain separate areas for people with mental and intellectual problems. They are often brought to the camp against their will and left for long periods of time. A 2012 Human Rights Watch report described a man tied to a tree for 5 years.
Bariga was interviewing the head of one such camp when she heard a child crying. She asked who it was. The man told her the child crying was a witch. He took Bariga to see her. Bariga said she was a 5-year-old girl chained to a tree. According to Bariga, the camp leader told her about 95% of the so-called witches at the camp are girls. Bariga then claimed that the man pointed to a group of girls from about ages 5 to 11, saying, "She's a witch, she's a witch, she's a witch."
The United Nations adopted the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities in late 2006. It calls on countries to support, protect, and guarantee full human rights and freedoms for all persons with long-term disabilities. More than 160 countries have signed the treaty. Bariga said shackling and other abuse of the mentally ill violates this treaty and others. Indonesia banned the use of pasong almost 40 years ago. However, Bariga says the government needs to do more to stop pasong.
Human Rights Watch is calling on Indonesia to enforce the ban by closely watching centers where it takes place. The organization is also urging Indonesia to work toward changing opinions about mental sickness among communities. Shanta Rao Bariga said, "The long-term goal is for governments all around the world to change how they treat the mentally ill." She said she hopes governments turn toward a system of community-based mental health care where people can live independently, make decisions for themselves, and get the care services they might want.
Studies have shown that in any given year, as much as a third of the world's population suffers some form of a mental disorder. 2/3 of them do not get the care they need and are at risk of abuse.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.